Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 484 of the Untitled Wrestling Show. And we are back relatively soon after the last episode.
Hey, we are keeping things on a consistent schedule. Because we're nothing, if not timely.
So we're going to talk about something recent?
1989!
Damn it!
WrestleWar 1989, and this was your pick.
I feel like there must have been a reason for it. I don't know what it was.
Well, we open with chyrons of the talent that we're going to see. Not matches, per se, just the wrestlers. And in one case, a music group, the Oak Ridge Boys.
Correct.
And there was one of them that I was oddly unsettled by.
For the graphics years, or the Oak Ridge Boys?
The graphics.
Okay.
For years, whenever we talk about one of the most famous tag teams in pro wrestling history, it's always talking about Terry Bam Bam Gordy and Michael P.S. Hayes. And I've been so ingrained as Michael P.S. Hayes that when they shortened it to Mike P.S. Hayes, I was like, what the hell is that?
Who is that?
Mike P.S. Hayes? That's no, that is not how it's supposed to be.
Look, you're paying by the letter in 89. You've got to make sure to get your, like, full value in.
We also find out that the Oak Ridge Boys are going to sing the national anthem and that there will be a concert from them later on that we don't get to see in the broadcast, according to JR. And the hair versus hair stip for the Gilbert Sullivan tag match is been removed from the event. Because it's too personal of a thing, and they don't want that to get in the way of their title match.
Yeah, that was weird. Okay, so here's the thing. It's 89. Pay-per-view is still a relatively unpolished thing. And especially when you're talking about the WCW NWA side. But it's weird that a show that you've paid for starts with not only the listing of all the talents, but then Jim Ross running down the card. And then the video, which also runs down the card and includes a match that isn't on the card.
And that would be?
The Junkyard Dog versus Great Muta, which in 89, like, it's not peak JYD, but you're like, it'll be interesting to see what Muta against the, I mean, past his prime, I think his fair star will look like as Muta's kind of on the rise. And then the actual match we get is Great Muta versus Doug Gilbert. And like, I don't know why. It's not explained why the switch was made.
Apparently, JYD didn't make it to the arena, according to them.
Sure. JYD was busy.
And this is a fine squash showcase of the Great Muta getting his offense in and hitting the signature moves, the power elbow, the kicks. And it's always enjoyable to watch those.
Yeah, not much happens. Doug Gilbert is, he gets more offense than he probably should, but at the same time, it's not that much. So, like, it's fine. Muta gets a win. It's, I don't know. It's certainly not the worst thing on the show. It's a fine squash.
Yeah, and seeing Muta be dominant is a entertaining beginning. And this crowd is seemingly into most everything that they're getting this evening.
Yeah, I mean, they're on and off. Like, they definitely, when the, like, when something interesting happens in the ring, they're going to react to it.
Butch Reed versus Ranger Ross. Teddy Long comes out and starts taking some notes, and he has a official visitor's pass because he's not part of the company officially, according to the storyline.
I don't know if this is a hot take, but I think this is the second best match on the show. Because at least it feels like there's a point to it where you're kind of led to believe that Ranger Ross is the guy you're supposed to care about because he gets the military escort coming out. The announcers are like, he's great. And then Butch Reed just kills him. Like, Ross gets a couple of moves, but this is mostly just Butch Reed dropping awesome elbows on him and Butch Reed just beating up Ranger Ross for 5 minutes.
Yeah, the chin lock cheating to me was kind of meh.
Weird.
But I loved the cheap shot kick to the head when Ross goes to get back in the ring. Opportunistic, and it looked fantastic.
Yeah, he does have, like, Butch Reed is this, like, giant dude. And it's weird that he gets extra leverage by kind of resting one of his ankles on the bottom ropes. But I kind of take that as, like, one of those great stupid things in pro wrestling. Like, if only I grab the rope really hard, it's going to make my abdominal stretch much more powerful.
Hey, you don't have, like, we know from the psychology of most heels, you don't cheat because you need to. You cheat because you can.
You cheat mostly just to bother the fans, not even because it's effective. Ranger Ross had this really cool moment where he knocks Reed to the floor with a dropkick, and then he just launches himself in what in modern days would be a really cool kind of plancha, but he just lands next to Butch Reed and punches him instead.
Ultimately, shoulder block, and Butch Reed gets the win.
Lex Luger cuts a promo, and he seems tired during it. Like, on a show full of guys screaming at the camera, where you've got Flair screaming at the camera, you've got Sting cutting this ludicrous screaming at the camera promo, you've got Michael Hayes screaming at the camera. Ricky Steamboat, you're like, okay, he's not a screamer. Lex Luger is just super quiet and chill during this. And it's an interesting stylistic choice and one that he would kind of forego later on. This definitely felt like he was kind of still finding his voice as a promo guy, even if he was champion already.
And we do get this kind of cadence to the show of match, backstage promo, match, backstage promo, match, backstage promo. Which leads us back to the ring for Dick Murdoch versus Bob Orton in a bull rope match.
So I should have tempered my expectations on this one, because I expected way too much from it. Because you hear Murdoch, you hear Orton, you hear bull rope, you think, sure, it's low on the card, but they're going to go out, they're going to, like, have great punches, they're going to kind of have a fight. And they don't really. Like, this is just very much a, we're third on the card and we're going to get through it. And the most devastating thing that happens is Murdoch gets a couple of strap shots to Orton's shoulder, which, I mean, this doesn't have any real intensity to it. And this is the one where I was like, okay, the crowd's not going to go crazy for everything, because the crowd really doesn't get into it until the post-match attack.
Yeah, the finish to this, tying up the legs and dropping some elbows, gets Dick Murdoch the win.
Yeah, and, like, they had the cowbell, and Orton had one shot with the bell, but, like, it didn't really go anywhere. More of the damage came from Murdoch taking off his boot and hitting Orton in the face with it. And even that was more played for laughs, where he wore the boot like a glove. Like, this was just a strange match given the names and the expectations that go with Bull Rope matches.
I would concur with that.
After the match, Gary Hart gets into the ring and takes a couple of shots on Dick Murdoch before Murdoch kills him. Orton attacks from behind. He kind of hangs him over the top rope, but like in comparison to some of the more brutal moments you get, you can tell what they're trying to do, but also like Murdoch is sitting on the ground. He's not hanging. It's not super devastating. This definitely felt like they weren't going out there to steal the show, and as a result, they were more going through the motions, and it's just kind of a disappointment given what you picture in your mind this could have been. Like, even in 89, these two guys together really could have done something better with the opportunity, I think.
We go backstage for an interview with Mike P.S. Hayes, in which he talks about wanting to have this title match all by himself and do it all by himself.
He really should have just winked at the camera when he said it.
The Samoan SWAT team versus the Dynamic Dudes.
So, if you've got Ace and Douglas, I don't understand why Ace is the one who gets beaten on for the entire match. Like, you have a big goofy dude and you have a small dude. Why wouldn't Shane Douglas get beaten on and then tag in the big guy?
I have no idea.
I don't know, it just makes you wonder, like, Shane Douglas has been wrestling for a while then. Like, what was the thought process behind it? Because this match is just the Samoans beating on Johnny Ace and beating on Johnny Ace and beating him and beating him and beating him and beating him. And it's not super exciting. Like, there's a good super kick from Fatu. You've got a really nice moment when Samu just kind of clubs Johnny Ace right in the face. But it's just kind of a lot of holding him. It's a lot of, like, just keep him down and let's throw in a Boston Crab and see what happens. And they don't do a ton with the amount of time that's spent beating up Johnny Ace.
Once the tag gets made, there is an awesome looking top rope splash by the Samoan SWAT team for that near fall.
Not by the guy who made the hot tag.
The finish to this. I really wanted that top rope splash to be the end of this.
Right. It looked great. It put over the Samoan SWAT team. It should have been the finish. But it wasn't. No. Go ahead. It was not the worst finish on the show by a country mile.
The Samoan SWAT team picks up one of the dudes for a slam. Top rope drop kick from one dude to the other dude's back. Samu falls down, and 1, 2, 3.
Right, Johnny Ace drop kicking the back of Shane Douglas gets the dudes the pin. Like, there were a couple of moments, but it was a long, long match to get to that finish.
Then we go backstage with the judges for the Flair Steamboat match. And every one of them gives a brief statement about how they're planning to judge the heavyweight title match in case it does go to a draw.
So Michael Hayes versus Lex Luger for the U.S. title.
I'm sorry, Mike P.S. Hayes?
Right. Okay. So this is basically what you expect. Luger beats up Hayes a lot. Hayes stalls on the outside. Luger beats him up. Hayes stalls on the outside. Something super awkward happens, and Hayes stalls on the outside. Because you've got that super weird moment where there's the diving clothesline from Luger. Hayes goes for a DDT. Luger does a back bump. Hayes does a back bump. They both jump up, and they stare at each other. And I get what was supposed to happen, I think, but I don't know why Luger fell down. Because everything else made sense with him shoving Hayes off. But he just kind of fell. And there's a couple of those moments where you're like, yeah, Lex is good, but Lex isn't necessarily polished yet. And I don't think it hurts the match. I think it just kind of gives you that kind of like sign of like where he's still going, what he still has to kind of grow into. Because for every weird moment with Lex you've got, you've also got these super athletic, weird, like crazy moment where Lex kind of does the tree slam. It's okay. But then he charges Hayes, goes for a cross body, and just completely clears the top rope and crashes onto the floor, which for a guy of his size and muscle mass is at the very least kind of nuts.
The crowd is really into Luger's offense, that every time he gets a couple shots in and you think he might be kicking it back on to being on the offensive side, the crowd really amps up. And very often he gets cut off and there's the slow grinding away of the champion by Mike P.S. Hayes.
It's not exciting. But it is grinding. I give you that much. I like Lex's comeback. I like that it's just repeated press slams. Like, that feels like the tough guy way to do it.
Until the finish.
This is a finish that was worse than the dudes versus the Samoan SWAT team.
This was a finish in the history of professional wrestling.
I mean, it was one of several finishes on this show.
Yes.
Hayes slips out of the torch rack and hits a DDT. That looked really cool. Because he does, like the announcers talk about how it's because of the perspiration. And Hayes really does just kind of slide off of Luger. There's an awkward ref bump where they kind of run past the referee and the breeze knocks him down. Hayes and Luger bump heads. Hayes staggers back into the ropes and leans there kind of dazed. Lex Luger lays down. And at this point, you would imagine Lex would stand up and they would go to the finish. That is what happens, right?
No. No, that is not what happens.
The ref calls for a DQ because he got bumped?
That is also not what happens.
Well, then I have no idea what could possibly be the finish of this match.
Remember how he said he was going to do it all by himself?
I recall that, yes.
Terry Gordy comes out and lightly shoves Michael P.S. Hayes off the ropes, to which he lands into a cover and pins Lex Luger.
Right. Lex Luger was pinned because he bumped heads with Michael Hayes, and Terry Gordy pushed Michael Hayes on top of him. Okay, if you want to be really, really generous to this, which you shouldn't be, Luger gets his feet on the ropes a couple of times and Gordy keeps shoving him off. Fine. He still got pinned because he bumped heads with Michael Hayes. This was poor. The match was okay. The finish was very, very poor.
Sting cuts a promo.
Sting yells a lot. About and weirdos.
The Sheik is already in the ring. While Sting gets his promo and entrance. I wonder who is going to win.
Yeah. Also, a squash match is supposed to, like, kind of get over the offense of the guy who's winning, usually. This one doesn't really do that because Sheik chokes Sting. Sting chokes Sheik. Sheik hits a gut wrench. Sting gets a deathlock. And, like, this was nothing.
This was a 2-minute defense of the TV title.
This is another match that I feel like could have been interesting, maybe. Like, yes, Sheik was past his prime, but like, it feels like they could have done something more than a bad squash.
Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat for the NWA heavyweight title. This match was good. I'm not breaking any new ground here. This match was good.
You don't say. This is the third match in the 1989 trilogy of Chi-Town Rumble, Clash, and then this one. It's been a long time since I've watched any of these. I want to say Clash is the best. That's the draw. I don't know how I'd feel about it going back and watching it now, but that's kind of my vague memory of watching this, like, probably over a decade ago now. And, like, this match is just on a completely different planet than anything else on the show. Like, I know it's not groundbreaking to say Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat are very good wrestlers who have very good matches together, but especially on this show where nothing's really clicking, this match stands out as just not just head and shoulders, but entire bodies above everything else.
It was watching this match that shows the real difference between methodical good slow bad guy offense and the boring boo, like, this is not entertaining bad guy offense. Because this is slow, methodical, I'm emotionally invested bad guy offense. But even the small stuff of, like, I'm going to drop a knee on your head. Like, it was such a difference in tone and demeanor comparatively. And I'm not sure if that's just because, like, it's the title and there's the emotional investment. But you see a lot of, you know, bad guy wrestlers, heel wrestlers, try to slow things down and use a slower pace or methodical offense. And it doesn't always click. And yet, in this instance, it clicks so incredibly well.
I think the big thing about it is these two bring an intensity to it. Like, these two feel like it matters. Like, they care what happens. Luger and Hayes, neither guy really felt like they cared that much about who won. There wasn't that level of kind of investment, which made the whole thing kind of cold. Steamboat and Flair, like, they're two crazy men who both want to be world champion. And a lot of this match is just Steamboat beating up Ric Flair. I think that's the biggest difference with this one versus the other two, where the other two are even more Flair in control. This one, Steamboat is like beating him up over and over, and Flair really gets to kind of bounce around for him. And there's a really cool moment when they end up on the floor and Flair puts Steamboat into the front row. He gives Steamboat a minute to recover, and then they just start chopping each other over the guardrail. Like, this has all the trappings of a fight, but still with all of the technique and, like, wrestling acumen you expect from Steamboat Flair.
Steamboat gets the double chicken wing, but Flair gets to the ropes. Flair hooks in the figure four, but Steamboat's able to escape. And the finish to this really highlighting the fact that the third match in this trilogy now, they know each other so well. They're so well versed with each other's wrestling styles and wrestling moves, even pulling out, like earlier in the match, pulling out stuff that hadn't really been seen, the like forearm shots from Flair in the corner. Having to go to that well of pulling those kind of things out.
Going on what you said, I love the moment when Steamboat rips Flair into the corner. Flair goes over the top. He's about to make his run over to the other turnbuckle. And Steamboat just blasts him while he's running down the apron. And you don't see that happen to Flair very much. And it's cool that they let Steamboat get that over on him. Like, it's just a nice moment of, it's a nice moment of the shtick doesn't work because Steamboat is so used to it now.
Steamboat grabs a body slam, slams down Flair. Flair rolls through and grabs a leg and hooks in a cradle and gets the pinfall to win the title.
This is a lot of fun. It's the closest they come on like televised matches during like this peak time to a sprint. And it's cool to see how they do this in like, all right, what does it look like when it's an all action Flair Steamboat match? It's just a lot of fun. And especially compared to everything else on the show, it just has that kind of special fire to it.
After the match,
post-match is maybe even better. Like,
yeah,
Terry Funk is pretty awesome. I think that might be breaking some new ground.
Oh, Terry Funk being awesome. That just happens all the time.
It's kind of his natural state. Because I love that Jim Ross gets in the ring. It's like, Ric Flair, you're the sixth time champion. It's great to talk to you. Flair's going to go into his, like, I'm humble. I've actually got respect for Steamboat. And then Terry Funk just sticks his face right in there. Hey, that was great, Ric. You know, if it would have gone to the draw, I definitely would have voted for you.
Oh, and hey, Ric, can I get a title shot?
Buddy. And like, Ric Flair, he's not nice about it, but he does very clearly make the point. Dude, you haven't been wrestling. You've been in movies for a while. You're not a top 10 contender. So, no. And this just outrages Funk. And like, the classic moment, the moment everyone knows is Funk just starts beating on him. He throws him out of the ring. He hits the pile driver on the table. I love that after that, he goes to the microphone and he's basically crying about Ric Flair not thinking he's good enough to get a title shot. Like, Terry Funk, former world champion, legend, just has that massive streak of insecurity where he will always go back to being a bad guy just to try to validate himself. Like, he's so awesome. Flair is great. Like, it's kind of a shame that Steamboat just kind of gets out of the ring and wanders off, because Steamboat having to react to this could have, like, added even more. But, like, let it focus on Funk and Flair, and it's just a really, really great moment.
And that was how we went off the air, right?
Correct. That would be the main event of the show, and nothing else happened. But wait, what's this? It's a promo from Nikita Koloff, special guest referee.
The Road Warriors versus Mike Rotunda and Steve Williams for the tag team titles.
At least this was energetic. It was bad, but it was energetic.
Yeah, they brawl throughout the ring. Doomsday Device, but then Dan Spivey pulls out the ref and starts attacking him. And we get a disqualification finish as the brawl continues both inside and outside the ring.
I think the most amazing thing is Iron Man made it through the WWE scrubbing and shows up on Peacock now. Okay, look. Flair Steamboat should have been the main event. But I mean, like, the Warriors Varsity Club, it was high energy. You ended with the genuine babyfaces winning, even if it's by DQ. That's a good way to end the show, right?
You'd think.
But again, it's not.
Not the case here. Dan Spivey and Kevin Sullivan versus Eddie Gilbert and Rick Steiner for the U.S. tag team titles.
Why? I don't get it. Sullivan and Gilbert are feuding right now. Kevin Sullivan is the Games Master, which is a terrible nickname. And you've got one good moment in this match, which is Gilbert and Sullivan are joined from the second they get into the ring. And during Gary Michael Cavada's introduction, Sullivan just punches Gilbert right in the face. And it's a really great punch.
Steiner gets posted, and it essentially looks like he's going to be out of this. So we get the two-on-one setup with the challengers having the advantage. And every time Rick Steiner gets up, he gets thrown into the post again.
Right. So, like, clearly, this is going to build to some big, gigantic moment when either Gilbert gets overwhelmed or Rick Steiner makes the heroic comeback. Because this match is less than 10 minutes long, but it feels 45, as Gilbert just gets beaten on by Spivey forever. And I will say, Dan Spivey hitting the rock bottom was not expected. It wasn't bad, but it was not expected.
The ref tries to get the heels to have one in, one out. And while that is happening, he doesn't see a tag. So Rick Steiner comes in while the ref is continuing to get the heels out of the ring and just smashes a clothesline. And Gilbert covers and gets the win.
Right. Remember that his arm was broken, right?
This is a finish that happened on this show.
I think the Hayes Luger finish was worse, but this one had the disadvantage of being 3 hours into a one-match show.
After the match, the bad guys try to attack again, and then we get a notification that Williams and Rotunda have been stripped of the tag team titles for attacking Nikita Koloff as the guest ref.
Huh. How about that?
Overall, I think we've made it clear this is a very much a one-match show.
Right. The benefit to modern like technology is you can only watch that match. I also think that match is better in a like outside of the context of the show. Like the fact that so many of the transitions in Flair's Steamboat are the result of someone going over the top rope feels more impactful when you don't also see Luger and Douglas and everyone else going over the top rope too. And like it's kind of able to breathe without the overwhelming suck of everything else kind of pulling it down. It's unlike the Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood, where Bad Blood is also a terrible show. But because it's like Shawn Taker is the main event, it kind of elevates the whole thing because, oh, well, they built up to something great. This one is bad, 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 bad. Okay, that was good. Bad, bad.
Hair of the show, who do you got?
I feel like it's all the usual candidates. Hayes, Ace, Polly, Flair, Doc, and my winner, and I'm not sure if it's a surprise or not, Missy Hyatt.
Hmm. I went with both of the dynamic dudes, Ric Flair, and Nikita Koloff's hair.
That weird little, like, design he had shaved in.
Yes, he had these horizontal lines shaved into the side of his head.
I feel like if we would have seen a different angle, there would have been like the rest of a picture, but we just never got it.
And on Sting's hair, most of it was bleached, and I could not tell from the promo and also when he turns the Scorpion Deathlock if almost everything is bleached except for a tiny little part at the very bottom towards the base of his neck that was like still the dark hair.
I mean, that also sounds right. Like, he had the definite pincushion thing going on where every spike was its own little, like, island on his head.
I mean, Flair's already in the Hair Hall of Fame, so I'm going to give it to the dynamic dudes.
Sure.
Coming up in our next recording session, we've got an event that must be important. Because in the name,
not a small event.
It says it's big.
A big event.
Uh-huh. And it appears there's 11 matches on it.
Oh, God, why?
So I don't know if they mean big in importance or big in the amount of matches they'll have.
I was going to say, we never called the IWA shows big events, even though they went for 6.5 hours.
We'll find out again soon.